Our next case this morning is Hunter against Barnhart. Mr. Scholl.
May it please the court. There are two important lines of evidence in this case that could lead to a finding of disability. One is the ability of the claimant to reach finger and handle. The second is the testimony of the claimant that he's unable to sustain work activity 8 hours a day, 5 days a week, and that issue is regarding his credibility. The main medical evidence is the findings of Dr. Holton, who is a consultative examiner hired by Social Security. He's a fellow of the American Academy of Disability Evaluating Physicians. And he found that Mr. Hunter could only do occasional reaching, fingering, and handling. And for the two jobs cited by the VE, they require the frequent ability to do those activities frequently. And Social Security defines frequently as doing an activity from 1/3 to 2/3 of an 8-hour workday, and as occasionally as less than 1/3 of a workday. And that's very important in this case. The findings of Dr. Holton in regard to that underlie his opinion are very important. He found diminished deep tendon reflexes in the upper extremity. Tennel sign was positive on the right, negative on the left. There was a positive apprehension sign on the right, and these all indicate shoulder and arm and neck problems. He also observed during the exam that this individual had difficulties with fine finger manipulation, and it revealed rather marked stiffness in both of his hands. Also, Dr. Holton's exam indicated that his range of motion for some of his major, the major joints of his body were severely limited. His cervical range of motion and his lumbar range of motion was limited almost in all directions to about 1/3 of normal. And some of his other major functions, although not as severe, were around the 1/2 mark, the hip, and the ability to use his feet and ankles. The ALJ does not say anything. I mean, the ALJ reports Dr. Holton's report, but doesn't cite another report saying doesn't rely upon another medical report saying that the findings are incorrect or anything like that. I think the best we can do is infer from what he said in his decision. He spent two pages of the decision and he's talking about functional capacity evaluations, and he stated that in this case, he says the conflict concerns the capacity of the claimant. The undersigned ordered a functional capacity evaluation. So in this case, it appears to me he's not concerned so much about the medical findings. I mean, he talks about the medical findings in other places, not these specifically, but he says it's the person's ability to function in the area of reaching, handling, and fingering. But he never says why Dr. Holton's opinion is not justified by the findings that he gave. He makes some very general references to medical evidence, but he doesn't cite other medical opinions. Now, I want you to note that there's a controversy here about the statements of the claimant. The state agency physicians who reviewed the file and Dr. Holden's opinion first marked limitations in reaching, handling, and fingering. And then, apparently after a conversation with the claimant, which is reported in a report of contact, the claimant denied, they say the claimant denied that he had any difficulties using his hands, was the exact terminology. At the hearing, the claimant denied, the claimant said he did have problems using his hands, and the testimony was to that effect. The one thing I want you to, what the state agency physicians did is they marked out the limitations on handling and fingering. I want you to note, though, that the claimant did not say anything in the conversations to the state agency representatives about his ability to reach. He talked about his ability to use his hands. The ability to reach is the ability to extend your arms in front of you and to your side and overhead, according to the definition of Social Security. The handling and fingering have to do with the use of your hands. Handling being gross, the gross use of the hands, the fingers together, and the fingering being the fingers individually. And the judge doesn't say anything about this, and doesn't say anything about this in his decision. He doesn't say that this report of contact says this. So there's a conflict here, and he does not resolve this conflict. And clearly the state agency or nobody resolved the conflict. Well, I don't think there's any conflict in regard to the reaching, I guess is what I will say, because he does not contradict, the claimant did not contradict that. Now, the second line of evidence is his ability to sustain work. And I mentioned some of the evidence there in regard to his difficulty, how extreme his range of motion was limited in especially important areas. His attorney below did send him for an exam, and he did not do well there. The functional capacity examiner said he could do less than sedentary work, which would confirm his testimony. In regard to the daily activities, I want to point out that I think the judge ignored.
Counsel, could you explain why, in your view, there is not substantial evidence for the ALJ's decision? You're reciting your client's view of his own disabilities, not all of which were accepted by the ALJ. And, of course, the question in these cases is not what are the physical abilities in the abstract, but what are the physical abilities in relation to the requirements of employment. And there was a vocational expert in this case who testified that considering your client's actual physical disabilities, there were many jobs in the employment, many jobs in the economy your client could perform.
Well, he cited two occupations, Judge, and both of those occupations an individual is unable to do if the person can only do occasional reaching, or if they could only do occasional handling, or if they could only do occasional fingering. Any one of those three limitations would not allow that individual to do that work. And so there would be no substantial evidence supporting
the vocational expert did, in fact, testify that considering the accepted limitations of your client, there was work that he could do. You want us to say that we're better vocational experts than the vocational experts?
I don't think, no, Judge, this isn't a matter of determining the vocational expert's testimony. So what I'm saying is in the RFC, the judge made a mistake in not finding that this individual...
No, a better line might be to say that the vocational expert was a quack. As far as I can see, these vocational experts would have a lot of trouble passing the Dalbert test, but that argument is not made, as I understand it.
No, Judge. But the vocational expert wasn't asked these limitations, except for he was asked about the fingering. And he did say if the person had difficulties, he did give some testimony indicating that if there was no ability to do fingering, then the person couldn't do these jobs. And I'll reserve my time for rebuttal, Judge.
Okay. Thank you. Ms. Thorson.
Good morning. I'm Mary Thorson for the Commissioner of Social Security. I'm going to start with what really I think is the ultimate issue that Mr. Hunter has alleged in this case, and that is that the VE testified that if he lacked bimanual dexterity, he couldn't do the job the VE originally identified. There's no opinion in the record, no medical source opinion in the record, that Mr. Hunter lacked bimanual dexterity. That was purely counsel's interpretation of the evidence, and particularly of Dr. Holden's opinion. I think it's pretty clear from the brief, Dr. Holden merely indicated that he felt Mr. Hunter would have difficulties performing some fine finger manipulation tasks. That's hardly the sort of concrete opinion that would have required the ALJ to delve further into this issue, certainly under the facts of this case, where there's no treatment for any physical impairment after 1993. Mr. Hunter went to his treating physician exactly once during the period at issue, and at that point he went for a consult with regard to the possibility of Social Security disability benefits. In fact, Dr. Mertens, the treating physician, suggested that Mr. Hunter could be retrained to do a desk-type job, which appears to be quite inconsistent with an allegation of difficulty using one's hands. In addition, I reviewed the record closely, and I do not believe I was able to find any reference to any hand limitations prior to Dr. Holton's report in 1997. That was well into the period at issue here, the 2.5 year period at issue here. And in addition, Mr. Hunter denied that he had any hand limitations up until apparently he testified at his hearing about 2 or 3 weeks before his insurance status expired. There's certainly ample reason that the ALJ could decline to include hand limitations in his ultimate RFC finding, and his decision to omit such limitations is supported by substantial evidence, as is his ultimate RFC finding. Just one or two other points I'll make, and then I'll open it up to questions. The reviewing physicians in particular noted that Mr. Hunter denied that he had hand limitations, and the ALJ specifically stated that he considered their opinion in formulating his RFC. In addition, the ALJ noted, I believe, on 3 separate occasions that he considered all of the record evidence, and the record evidence included Mr. Hunter's denial of any hand limitations. He didn't deny that he had hand limitations just once. He denied he had hand limitations on 2 or 3 occasions to the state agency. When they contacted him a second time to inquire whether he would go for a consult, he said, "I thought we covered this yesterday. I don't have anything wrong with my hands." He ultimately, a few days later, changed his mind, said he would go for a consultative examination, but the state agency employee asked him to identify functional limitations relating to his hands that would warrant such an examination. Mr. Hunter couldn't do so, so the exam was ultimately not performed. And I would also just point out that a functional capacity examination was, in fact, done by a Mr. Ross, a physical therapist, shortly after Mr. Hunter's insurance status expired. It appears Mr. Hunter wasn't able to cooperate with the bulk of that examination, however. And had the ALJ succeeded in sending Mr. Hunter for an additional functional capacity evaluation, it's highly unlikely that the results would have differed significantly from those Mr. Ross obtained, which he indicated he couldn't pass on the validity of because of Mr. Hunter's alleged inability to perform the tasks he was asked to perform. And I would just conclude that the ALJ's decision is amply supported by this record and ask the court to affirm the commissioner's decision.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Anything further, Mr. Scholl?
Well, the opinion of Dr. Holton on the reaching fingering and handling, I don't believe is all that unclear. And I would point out, just beyond what he says, the state agency physicians, after they reviewed his report, originally found that he had limitations in these three activities. And then when you review the report, you'll see they marked those out. I clearly think that those limitations are there. And as I said, even in regard to his testimony, the reaching limitation is still there. Now, second of all, I agree that there are some problems with what he's saying his testimony on these use of his hands. However, he's not using his hands, his activities, as his mother testifies and he testified, he's not using his hands from one-third to two-thirds of the day. So I don't think that he doesn't have an accurate picture. The doctor, Dr. Holton, observed him and saw what was going on and said he had a problem and gave those limitations.
Thank you, Mr. Schultz.
Thank you.
The case will be taken under advisement.